This is a recording of the 12-step panel taped at the first California Mid-State Regional Convention for NA in Fresno, California on Saturday, June 30th, 1990. In observance with the 11 traditions stating anonymity at the public level, please keep this tape within the fellowship and observe the anonymity of all NA speakers.
But now I'd like to introduce our speaker, Laurie from Fresno.
Hi, I'm Laurie. I'm an addict.
I'm
real nervous. Just thought I'd let everybody know that. When I was asked to share on the first step, powerlessness and unmanageability, I thought, no problem. You know, everything in my life has been powerless and unmanageable since I can remember. And 5 minutes ago, I lost everything I thought I knew about it. Being nervous. So I just thought I'd let everybody know that also. Powerless and unmanageability, where I remember getting in touch with that was early in sobriety. I believe I had about 6 months, didn't have a sponsor. The first time I tried to work any of the steps, and being that that's the first step, I was laying in bed and started writing down what had happened to me in my life. And like, I had no understanding of what powerlessness and unmanageability was. I thought I basically had control of a lot of things, like everything in my life. You know, it was always other people's problems. It was never my problem. And where it got really powerless and very unmanageable is everything that I've done in my life, I had stopped so far that like I couldn't feel what I had done as being, you know, powerless and unmanageable. And when I started writing this down, how my life had become powerless and unmanageable, like it was almost like a spiritual awakening, and like I hadn't even gotten to the second or third steps. And I did about 2 weeks of crying and, you know, not understanding anything, because I still didn't have a sponsor and I didn't know what I was doing here, and I didn't really know how drugs had made me so powerless and unmanageable. But, you know, like I know what I've done to work this step, and that's like keep coming back and like get really, really honest with what I've done in my life. And from, you know, everything, the people that I've harmed and you know, just everything. And I just lost it. You know, I don't really have, you know, it's like I'm around a lot of powerlessness and unmanageability in my life now, especially like with my job. I get to relive this all the time. And I don't have an answer. Like, I can't prove anything to anybody. All I know is by writing it down and doing what I've done that I've been able to see that it's really, there really is powerless. That, that my life was really unmanageable. And is my time up yet?
You
know, oh well, okay. You know, it's kind of hard to talk 7 minutes when it's like I really don't know, you know, what more to say, except that I'm trying to think of a word that describes powerlessness and unmanageability, and I can't think of a word that describes that. You know, what did I do? You know, I spent my life basically locked up and using drugs. And like I said, and until I came through this program and I kept coming back and I decided to stay clean, did I get to feel the things that I've done, that I have done in my life. And There was a gentleman that shared a story with me a couple weeks ago, and I thought, well, you know, I'll share that with everybody when I do this. And he told me that there was a couple people that went through a recovery home, and they both were in the same recovery home at the same time, and they decided they had started a relationship in this recovery home, and they wanted to leave the program. They got into a relationship and they wanted to leave this program together. And why this came up is because I work in a recovery home, and I had a young lady that was wanting to leave, and it was really getting to me, and I didn't know what else to give her, and everything in her life was like perilous and unmanageable at that moment, and she couldn't see that. And this gentleman shared this story with us all as we tried to help her stay, and he said the two that were in this recovery home decided they were going to leave, and they didn't indeed leave the program. Before they left, they had, the whole house had sat with them for a long time trying to get them not to leave. And they did walk out the door, and they stayed out 3 or 4 months using. And she went to look for him one day, and nobody could find him, and she went to his apartment with some friends, and everything was locked up, and they couldn't get in. And she finally found a window that was open, and as she crawled through the window, she could smell him. And we shared this story with this young lady because this is powerless. This is unmanageable. And where I think I was really powerless and unmanageable in my life is when I thought that using drugs and drinking was for the other person, like the death or the jails or the institution was for the other person. And that's where my life was really mostly, at the worst, is that's where it was, unmanageable and powerless. And this young man had been dead 5 days before they had found him in his bathroom. And where I recently got to get in touch with the powerlessness is not even this story, that today that I could feel the impact of it, and I'm not going through it and living this right now, and I'm not so unmanageable, and I'm not so powerless over the things that I do. She still is, and she did not stay. So I really don't know what more to say, except that I think that this disease is all around, one way or the other, indirectly or directly, powerless and unmanageable. You know, that's all I got to say. Thank you.
I would now like to introduce our next speaker, Mona from Fresno.
Hi, my name's Mona and I'm an addict. 7 minutes is a lot longer than I thought. So before I tell you how I did the second step, which is we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves would restore us to sanity, I'm going to tell this little story I read. There was a man being chased by a tiger, and the tiger was very close behind him. And he came close to a cliff, and he had no choice but to jump. He jumped and grabbed a hold of a branch. And on that branch, there was a little mouse that was eating at that branch. And he, in desperation, he says, "Help." He screams out, "Help, God, help me." The answer came, "Do you believe? Do you trust me?" The man says, "Anything, anything. Yeah, I believe." And the guy says, and then God says, "Then let go." The man says, "Is there anybody else up there?" In my case, when I asked if there was anybody else up there, God says, "There's Narcotics Anonymous." So when I came to Narcotics Anonymous, although I had my childhood, the God of my childhood, I was very angry with. I was very resentful. I was very distrusting of him. I no longer wanted anything to do with him. The last couple of years of my using, I wouldn't call out to him because I knew that I kept doing the same thing over and over again, and I thought he was tired of this shit. So when I came into Narcotics Anonymous, I liked the first step, but I didn't know how to do it. But I did the second step 3 months before I did my first step. And the way I did it was when I came into the program, I heard people talking about faith and trust and believing in something. And they didn't call him God. They didn't say, you have to name him God or all these other names that I had heard before. You say, believe in something, anything. Believe in a chair if you choose. At least trust and believe in something. What I chose to do was I chose to believe in you. I chose to believe in this fellowship. I chose to believe in the 12 steps and the 12 traditions and the sayings, above all the sayings. I love that one, the serenity prayer. I used to cut it short. I said, God, grant me serenity, grant me serenity. All day long when I was desperate or in need, I tell myself, easy does it, Mona, just for today, just for today. And I was scared to death to come into these rooms. I'd sit in the back, and once the meeting was over, I'd run out the door. But I loved what you had to say. I loved what you had to share. I found out that I wasn't unique, that I wasn't the only one that had did these things that had been done in my life. And it really helped me to believe and to trust in the fellowship. Since then, I've gone on to the third step. But that's how I did the second step. I hope it's 7 minutes. Not yet? That's how I did it.
I would now like to introduce our speaker, Sherry B. from Fresno.
I'm Sherry, I'm an addict. I 7 minutes is going to be a long time, ladies. I had to get out my basic text and like remind myself over and over, because like I knew I was going to get up here and forget what the third step was, you know, and it's like I too get real nervous at things like this. You know, the third step is that we made the decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. And, you know, that's something that I strive to do every day, you know, and I wish I could say that I just did it once and, like, it has carried me through day after day after day. But for me, it's something that I have to do on a daily basis, you know, and sometimes more than once, you know, because, like, my pea brain decides halfway through the day, you've got it lit. You can do it. You know, and then I get myself into trouble, and then I realize, oh, this must not be God's will. You know, and over and over, trying different things and trying different ways and means to get what I think I need or what I want, you know, that I realize that this might not be what's supposed to be for me, you know. I truly believe for me that I had to be around here for a while to like truly make that decision, you know, to like fully trust, you know, like Mona's little story of saying like, you know, are you sure that this is right for me? Are you sure that this is what I'm supposed to be doing? You know, that through circumstances in my early sobriety and whatnot, that, you know, like I chose to have another person as my higher power, you know, and not like the group or the chair or whatever it was. And I had been around here for a few days before I like feel for myself that I truly made that decision, you know, and like by doing that, it also meant like putting my higher power, whom I choose to call God, putting Him first in like all areas of my life. Over the relationship, over the job, over the house, over the car, over the money, you know. And it's like, what I've got, you know, like when I did that, you know, and like truly asked for his will and like for him to work in my life and give me the gifts that he wants me to have, you know, is like along with that came this insight or these feelings of when I'm not putting my priorities in order, you know, when I am putting something else ahead of God, then I start getting this real terrible feeling, you know, and it's like, you know, I can wake up in the morning and things are, you know, the sky is blue and the grass is green, and by 12 noon, the biggest cloud has walked over me, you know, and it's like, but why? You know, and I just don't understand why, you know, and like, what my experience has shown is that, you know, somewhere in my life, my priorities are out of whack, you know, and like, by asking God's will daily, you know, and like, after I'd been here for a while, I thought, you know, well, shoot, I've worked 1 through 5, now what? You know, like, as if 1, 2, 3 are just like, you just never do them again, you know, and like, I still find myself working those over and over, you know. And like I said, I wish it was just like a magic wand. Okay, you've got a year. You're over step one. You don't ever have to do it again, you know. And like for me, my sobriety has not been that way, you know. That I still, you know, get insane. And I still am powerless and unmanageable, you know. I realize I'm powerless. Most days my life is manageable, though, you know. And like what I truly believe is it's by asking, you know, God to you know show me the way to go, you know. But like I said, it's just it's practicing and I get, you know, I'm stubborn and I forget, you know, or I get in a hurry, you know, because like for me my time is in the morning, you know, is when I ask God to guide me through that day and you know I can get in the shower and get going and then you know I gotta run out, you know, and I go on with my day and I don't take that extra couple of minutes to like just have that one-on-one and just ask for that guidance. You know, it's something that I know that has gotten me, you know, in throughout this whole week, and I keep hearing, you know, but for the grace of God, but for the grace of God. And I know that you know, like my sobriety is a gift, and but for the grace of God, I've gotten to stay here, you know, and that I try daily to humble myself and like to remove the pride and whatnot and like ask for that guidance again, you know, and like out of doing that too, I've gotten an inner guidance, you know, that you know, like in early sobriety, I always had to have these big, you know, pictures. You know, it was like, okay, God, if it's not your will, you know, put a tree over the road, and I can't go where I'm supposed to be, you know, where I want to go, or you know, something like that. And like that was all I could see, you know, in early sobriety. And now what I've gotten is that inner voice. You know, and I've gotten that little twinge of uncomfortableness when I'm not supposed to be doing something, you know, or, you know, just the craziness, the committee goes off, you know, full blown, you know, trying to tell me, you know, what I deserve and why I should have it and, you know, and that kind of thing, you know, it's, you know, it's something that you know, by practicing, you know, I'm striving, you know, to get it, you know, and you know, I that's how it's been for me. Thank you.
I would now like to introduce our speaker, Jenny, from Fresno.
You'll tell me, right?
Yeah, I will, brother.
My name is Jenny, and I'm an addict. Well, when I first got into the program, and I came to a recovery's house. Yeah, it was recovery. It's a lot of therapy, like, how are you feeling, you know? And that was recovery for me because they introduced me to the steps. They introduced me to Narcotics Anonymous. They introduced me to meetings. They introduced me to a little bit of honesty. And after the first 3 steps, they said, okay, the orientation's over. You know, you know that you're unmanageable. You know that you're powerless over people, places, and things. And you know that you have to come to believe in a power greater than yourself. And so you've made this decision to turn your will and your life over to the care of God. And I was feeling real good about all this stuff. And then when they told me, now it's time to get to work. And I'm going, oh, yeah, sure, because the rest of it was pretty nice. You know, like I didn't have to really look at anything. I just had to kind of like, maybe, you know, like look at my disease and acknowledge it. you know, and like be willing to do a little bit of stuff. But now I had to look at myself, and it said that you're going to have to make a searching and fearless moral inventory. And I thought, what's that? You know. And so they gave me this little thing called Hazelden, you know, and it was real nice, and it had like all these little areas, like where were you selfish, you know, where were you self-seeking, and where were you generous, you know, and so like the negative parts of my life, you know, I could fill out real quick, you know, and like I could, you know, maybe fill out an extra page, but you know, like where was I giving, you know, like, you know, my self-esteem just wasn't all there, you know. And, like, you know, getting honest, you know, it's like where I thought I was giving, you know, like I was taking down names. I gave here, and I gave here, and I gave there. Therefore, you owe me. You know, there was no giving about it, you know, like I was just holding paper, you know. So, and then I got to do a fifth after that, you know, but I don't know, that one kind of like left me empty, you know, and it was good for me at the time. It was good for me to get through this recovery center for 30 days and hit the streets and get a little bit of confidence in myself. But what happened, you know, it's like all that stuff that I discovered about myself, you know, all the stuff where I abused my kids, okay, and where I abused my wife, you know, emotionally. And I could always, you know, and where I was very proud, you know, false pride, you know, because I always thought, well, I never, you know, smacked him around or sexually abused him, you know, but I emotionally abused him because I ruled my kids by fear, you know, and like what that does, what that inventory allows me to do, it allows me to begin to live a clean and sober life, you know, because like for me, like, and I realize this the longer that I stay clean, is like, the drugs and alcohol, you know, was what got me here, you know, through the powerless of not being able to stop at the first one, you know, and the unmanageability about winding up in hospitals, winding up in jails, and breaking promises, you know, and not having enough money because the bag had to come first, you know, like all that part of my life was real unmanageable, you know, and it was because of drugs and alcohol, but now I don't have those. So what's my excuse now? You know? And the fourth step gives me the excuses that I have now. But God also gives me a thing that says, well, there is no excuse. If you are aware of these things, why do you keep doing them? You know? And because I want to. It's my will, and I'm going to do it, and I like it. You know? But my sponsor once told me that I can do anything I want in this program as long as I'm willing to pay the consequences. You know, and I was no longer willing to pay the consequences, you know, of that little flimsy first fourth step that I did. And so what I had to do is I had to get with my sponsor, and I said, you know, I did a fourth step, and, you know, he was very, I don't know what, hardcore, I guess. He says, well, you're going to have to do another one, and you're going to have to do it the way the program says to do it. And I go, but I already did one, you know, and I got to share my fifth with this priest who came in who I would never see again, right? So he was real safe, you know. And but what happened is by becoming aware of all this stuff and being fresh, like it got to eat at my conscience. You know, like I screwed somebody over, and by God, I should make it right because it says so in the steps. You know, and how can I go any further? And so, you know, at the time, you know, when I first got clean, like, we didn't have the big book, you know, and there wasn't the little four-step inventory, you know, that NA has now. So I did the four-step according to the other program, you know, and it was like write down my resentment, you know, and the causes and what it affected. And after that, there was something that I didn't have on the other Hazelden step, and that was a sexless who I screwed over sexually and a fearless. What are my unknown fears, you know, and like I got a pretty good book going down, and I was afraid, you know, I was really afraid, you know, because this guy's going to think I'm a chump, right, and I got this image to uphold. I always want to look good, right, and I couldn't do it, you know, because, you know, like I thought that this never happens to anybody else. You know, the stuff that I put down on my four step, you know, he's not going to like me. You know, and what he did is he shared some of his stuff that was on his four step, you know, with me, and I wasn't alone anymore. You know, like I wasn't alone. Like I wasn't alone in my drug addiction. I'm not alone in my recovery. You know, that one lasted for about 8 years. You know, and what I did, you know, after getting, you know, like some of the other speakers were saying, like how you have to go back and you have to start working the steps all over again. I never thought I'd have to do another four step. I mean, two's enough, right? And I mean, what else can be divulged? Because you're taking care of the stuff that the wreckage of today with the tenth step. And I thought I was doing a pretty good job of that, but like my thinking, my head, and my actions weren't like coinciding. Right? You know, so something is wrong here. You know, and God is trying to tell me, and my head's lying like a dog to me, saying, you're doing okay. You know, you're going to meetings. You're working a tent. You know, you're being a loving person. You're giving. You know, but what I forgot to do is I forgot to take care of Danny. You know, and it's this little kid, like, who never grew up. You know, and, like, he's hollering inside, man, I'm fucking lonely. You know? And this adult is saying, don't feel that. That's chump feelings, man. You know, you're not lonely. Look at all the friends you got. You know, and so what I got to do is I got to look at myself again. You know, and I got to do some stuff that I wanted to do to fix this loneliness. You know, as a result, you know, I'm a single parent today. And I'm a single parent today. I'm doing another inventory. You know, and what that's all about is that I get to look, you know, at how, like, my feelings, you know, overwhelm me, you know, and like by doing, you know, talking about some of the stuff that I'm starting to acknowledge now, you know, with this other lady, you know, who also is in the other program, and she said, what does that feel like, Danny? You know, what's it feel like to be lonely, you know? What's it feel like for you, like, to feel not loved? And I said, it feels like I'm being eaten alive, you know? And she said, I want you to feel that, you know, and I want you to be okay with that. And what do you do with it when that happens? I said, I find a fix. I find a fix. I find somebody who will say that they love me, you know, somebody will hold me, you know, somebody who will nurture me, you know. But are you using them? Oh, shit, I got to look at that one, too. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, so what am I doing here? You know, am I just like getting myself fixed and still using other people? Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I don't want to say that in front of you because I want to look good. You know, but that's me. I'm scared and I'm lonely. I got 9 years clean and sober, man, and I'm going into a brand new area of my recovery and there's hope here. There's hope. You know, it's like, don't be afraid. Don't let fear hold you back from what you got to do. Because the miracle is worth it. Thank you.
He took up your guys' minutes. I would now like to introduce our speaker, Kathy from Fresno.
Hi, I'm Kathy, and I'm an addict.
Hi, Kathy.
Well, I wasn't nervous until about 3 minutes ago, and I'm really grateful to be here today and to ask to share about this step. You know, I've heard a lot of good things, a lot of short things, a lot of long things, and you know, but like I heard some things that I lived through. You know, it was like working step one, you know, admitting I was powerless and unmanageable, you know, and like in finding like I still am. I'm still that way, you know. I have more manageable days than not anymore, you know, but I still have faults and I still have things I have to go through to get to whatever plane my higher power wants me to be at, you know. And you know, and going through step two and three, and then, you know, to me, like in my early recovery, I thought those were easy. You know, because like I was riding that proverbial pink cloud, you know. It's like I came in and it's like, yeah, you know. It's like I don't have to do this shit no more, you know. You know, okay, I quit using drugs, you know. But what I had to find out is like why I used them to begin with, you know. And then that's when four came in, you know. And I fought four for a long time, you know. People said get a sponsor, start working your steps. Get in touch with, you know. So get in touch with what, you know? I'm sorry, but I didn't feel like I really meant a whole hell of a lot, you know. And so like it took me a long time to do my fourth step, you know. And I found a lady in this program that I trusted, that we had similarities, that loved me, you know. And I started writing on my fourth step, and it took me about, I don't know, several months, you know, to just get the surface stuff out of the way. You know, like my fourth step was all surface stuff. You know, the parents, the grandparents, the mother, the kids, the ex-man, this and that, and that, you know, and all this shit, you know, that really didn't, like, touch on what was really going on with me. You know, and like she said again, okay, you got this one done, do it again. You know. So after I wrote down the fourth step and I shared it with her, you know, it's like even if that first fifth step was kind of like surface, it was a beginning to my recovery. It was like starting all over again. You know, after I started sharing on my fifth step, you know, like the exact nature of my wrongs, I had, like, we sat down, we said a prayer. We said the most touching long. I mean, I started my fifth step in tears. You know, it's like, I don't want to do this. You know, I don't want to tell you how fucked up I am. You know, but she held my hand and we started. You know, and then I admitted to myself and to another human being the exact nature of my wrong. You know, it says our wrongs. Well, you know, I'd love to do yours. You know, yours is a lot easier than mine, you know. I do inventories all the time, you know. That's one of my faults, you know. But when I start having to get in touch with, like the exact nature of my wrongs, you know, it's like I kind of have a blind side. You know, I've always had this blind side growing up, you know, and that's kind of, like, kept me out of a lot of scrapes, you know. Even being in jail, it wasn't my fault I was in jail. It was their fault. You know, coming from the family I was from, I wanted to hold on to that one for years and years. Like, it was my parents' fault, you know. I'm this way because of them, you know. And then, like, what I had to find out in part of that fifth step was, like, somewhere along the line, I had to take responsibility for me. You know, like, somewhere along the line, I got smart, you know. It was like God says, okay, you got a brain, you can do this, you know. Well, the drugs kind of said, okay, you don't have to do this no more. You don't have to grow up. You can continue on, like, wreaking havoc. You can continue on hurting your daughter. You can continue on, you know, like, not paying bills. You can continue on not showing up for work. You know, things that, like, I was supposed to learn somewhere along the line. I didn't learn these things. You know, and, like, admitting to God, you know, it's like I figured, like, He knew already. You know, and like God was always like a real fearful being for me growing up, you know, the fire and brimstone stuff, you know, and it took me a long time and a lot of patience and a lot of like loving through this program to say, you know, it's like, well, you know, God forgives, you know, and you don't have to be afraid of Him anymore, you know, and like taking responsibility for my actions, you know, like I still struggle with that. You know, I'd still like to put it on you. I'd still like to be like that little girl that, like, still running, you know, and I can't do that anymore. You know, today I have a sponsor. I'm doing another fourth step. I'm doing another first step. I mean, like, I've started all over again, you know, and, like, this is, I don't know how many times around this one is, you know, and now I'm getting, like, this gut stuff, the stuff that's just coming out, you know, and, like, and I'm pulling it out. It's not coming out willingly. You know, but like different things are triggering old emotions, old memories, you know, like, why am I acting this way? Well, this is the way you acted 15 years ago. You know, like, I stopped growing up somewhere, you know, and So the fifth step today allows me to get it out. You know, and I do a lot of little mini fifths, you know. And there's people in this program that I trust. And if something is striking me at a moment, and I have to get it out, today I get it out. You know, I can live in pain for so long, and then I have to grow. And that's when I share. That's when I pull somebody inside and say, I just can't do it anymore. I'm hurting. You know, and growth comes out of that. That's one thing I've learned. I mean, a continuous thing. Like, I haven't had to use through death. I haven't had to use through like money loss. I haven't had to use through cars getting ripped off, you know. And yes, Fresno was exciting. But, you know, it's like, you know, I'm like, and even that, you know, like, I should have known better. I shouldn't have parked in that damn parking lot. Yeah. But, you know, but like today I know like there's some other things I have to work on. There's areas, you know, I was sharing with Mona earlier about, you know, a little bit about like what I have to work on with my mom. My mom passed away a year ago, and things that I could have shared with her with this program that I didn't. You know, for my reasons, for like reasons that I felt I was being judged and stuff. And I have to do a fourth round that. I have to share it, and I have to go out and I have to share it with her, you know, and say like I'm sorry. You know, and I've had to make inventories around my daughter. Today when I receive criticism, I don't really look at it so much as criticism, so much as somebody coming up to me and saying, I love you. You know, and this is what I see that maybe you don't see today. And that goes down on paper. You know, and like this program has done for me with the institutions, with churches, with, you know, like psychiatry, everything that they say in these books, none of that stuff worked for me. You know, but this program worked. I walked through the doors and like, and I didn't fear anymore. You know, not to the extent where my gut was in this knot that wouldn't let up, you know. Finally the knot started letting up. I wasn't so sick about things anymore, you know. I still have a lot of areas to work on. You know, but like the fifth step for me is a release. You know, I start it with a prayer, I end it with a prayer, and I share it with somebody that I trust. You know, and like, and once I did it, I didn't have the fear over it anymore. You know, like, the fourth step I thought was real scary. Well, you know, like, hey, writing it down to me, it's like I crossed out all kinds of lies that I was just telling myself and I had to start all over again. But like when that stuff was on paper and I was sharing it and getting it out and crying over it, you know, then it was a release and it was the beginning of growth for me. Yeah, I want to welcome the newcomers and anybody who's here for their first convention and all the people who are supporting this region. You know, this is real special. I want to welcome everybody and thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Kathy. I would now like to introduce our speaker, Jackie, from Fresno.
My name's Jackie, and I'm an addict. I didn't want to come up here and do this because I'm real nervous, too, and I don't like speaking in front of a lot of people, but my sponsor called me up, and she said, Jackie, Barbara C. and I were talking, and we've decided that it's time for you to get into service. And so you're going to be speaking on the sixth step at the convention. I said, what? You want me to do that? No, I don't want to do that. And she said, remember what I told you? And I said, what? And she said, you cannot refuse any reasonable request. And I said, oh, okay. So I went to this thing, you know, like I didn't know what I was going to do because I wasn't working on the sixth step right at that point, I thought. And I'm doing this fourth step right now. And so I thought, okay. This was like quite a while back, and I said, okay, I'm going to do my fourth step, and I'm going to do my fifth step, and then by the time the convention gets here, I'll do the sixth step, and then I'll be okay, and I'll know what I'm going to say. And so that was my plan, right? So I started working on my fourth step and stuff, and a few weeks after that, I called her up, and we were talking and stuff, and I was talking to her about this, and coming and speaking on the panel, and she said, you're not on the panel. And I said, oh, I'm not? And she said, no. And I didn't tell her that she told me I was going to do this, because I thought, well, she forgot, so now I have to do it, right? And I didn't say anything to her, and Mona calls me like 3 days ago and tells me, well, I just want you to know that you have to be there at 2:30 because you're speaking, and I'm all like, oh, shit, I didn't do anything. So I got out my book real quick, you know, and I read the sixth step, and I said, okay, I know what I'm going to say, and I got like real nervous and everything, and the sixth step to me is like being willing to change my personality and myself, and being willing to like let God remove all the fear. Because like when I did my fourth step, I wrote down all the things about myself, and to me the fourth and the fifth is when you find out about yourself. And I did the fifth with my sponsor, and I didn't like what I found out, you know. I was really scared to do it because I thought I was going to find this awful person. And then she made me write good things about myself too. And that was real hard to like look at the good things, because I only see the bad things in myself. And we went on and we did the sixth step, and we looked at the character defects, and she said, are you, you know, entirely ready to have God remove those? And I said, yeah, I don't want to be that kind of person anymore. I don't want to hurt people, you know, I don't want to do things that are going to hurt myself. And she said, okay. And so we prayed, and I got all emotional and I cried, you know, because I was really sad that I had done all these things in my life, and I felt really bad about myself. And the next day, I went, and I don't remember who it was I was talking to, but I lied to somebody, you know, and I called her up and I said, Suzanne, and she said, what? And I said, I lied to somebody today. And she said, uh-huh. And I said, well, didn't we just do the sixth step yesterday? And she said, yeah. And I said, well, I'm not supposed to be like this anymore, right? You know, because I thought, like, when I did my sixth step, I was going to pray and I was going to be this totally different person. Because being entirely ready to have him remove it means you just, boom, you changed, you know. And I found out it's not like that. It's like a process, and that's what the steps are for, to keep working them and keep working them, and we change. And when I was reading in the book, it was saying that we can't stay here without changing, like, our personalities. And even if we do and we don't change our personalities, we're real miserable because we keep hurting people and we keep hurting ourselves. And that made a lot of sense to me. And I have to pray a lot because I'm not willing to give up my character defects sometimes. I want to just be, like, real cold and real mean, and I want to lie and cheat and steal and do all that shit that I used to do. Because that's what I know how to do. It's like real hard for me to come here and like tell you, oh, you hurt my feelings. Or to, you know, just to be different, to be nice to people, to like, I used to walk around and if you looked at me wrong, I wanted to kick your ass. You know what I mean? And that's just the way that I lived. And like I talked about other people all the time, and I used like men in relationships and stuff, and I, you know, I just used and abused everybody in my life. And when I pray, I feel like I get some kind of relief from that. I feel like, you know, God is with me, and like I'll change when it's time for me to change, and he's going to like work miracles in my life. And he has, because I'm not the same person that I was when I got here. And I don't lie all the time, and I don't, well, I cheat sometimes. But, you know, I don't do all that stuff all the time anymore like I used to. And it feels good today. I you know, I can feel good about myself. And wow, I was reading something else when I in a sixth step too, and it was talking about letting go of things. And I don't like to do that either, because like I like to have like control of everything in my life. And what I know is true is that God has control of everything. And if I give it to him, things can be good, and if I don't, it usually ends up like shit. But I have to work another sixth step when I'm done with this fourth and fifth that I have to do now, because I didn't rush on doing it. And I don't know, it just gives me relief. And I know God is with me all the time, and like I was real nervous before I came in here, and I was, you know, at the play, and I got all emotional because I was seeing myself, you know, there the way I used to be. And Barbara C. came and gave me a hug, and she just told me to just pray. And, like, prayer to me is the answer to everything today. Because, you know, I don't know sometimes what to do or what to say. All I know is to, like, pray to God to have the willingness and the courage to do his will. And I don't know. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Jackie. I would now like to introduce our speaker, Mike, from Chinatown.
I'm Mike, and I'm a drug addict. I'm nervous, too. I'm not really, but I just, everyone else says that, and I want to look nervous and stuff. Fresno had a Northern California convention about 7.5 years ago, and I was a reader at that convention, and we were often in a little room before the thing. It was for the main meeting, and Saturday night meeting, and there was this other lady that was participating that had a lot of time, and I had about 6 months or something, and I told her how nervous I was, and she says, "Well, at looking at all the people," she says, "Well, don't look at the people. Look, find a spot on the wall when you sit down. Find a spot on the wall above everyone's head, and just stare at that spot. You know, and I've done that ever since. I'm a little bit better at it now. I can turn and look at people's faces and stuff like that. But for the longest time, I would just change the spot from the corners to back and forth. I'm supposed to, talk about, humbly asking God to, remove my shortcomings. And the easiest way for me to do that, and the way that I've always done that, is by begging. And that's about as humble as you can get, because usually that's when I talk to God, I hold out until it gets to the big point, it's like, oh please God, and I will get on my knees also, because I get a better perspective of who I am and who God is when I'm on my knees, how I have to meet God now. I can talk to God about things that are going on in my life, and I don't have to be on my knees, and I don't even have to have it be in any type of prayer of any kind. But when it comes to like character defects and shortcomings and stuff like that, man, I got to get on my knees, because I usually I'm not partaking in any of these, and it's so painful. It feels real painful, and like other people have talked about before, how the steps evolve and how they change, I don't know why, but I have probably 10 times as many character defects and shortcomings today as I did 8 years ago when I came in here, I know that I had just as many, or even more then, but I wasn't conscious of them. The first year, the only one I think that I was even aware of was that I was dishonest. And cash register dishonesty, too. That was the only one, See, I'm a little dishonest, I remember that it was just as hard for me not to steal something every day as it was not to take something every day. In fact, on some days it was even harder for me not to steal something. And that was one of my first character defects or shortcomings that I was able to focus on, that I became aware of and was trying to do something about. Being aware of them and asking God for help with them. A lot of times they're years apart for me. A lot of times, I'll have problems in my life. I'll have uncomfortableness will arise, and that will exist for a period of time. Then all of a sudden, I'll have an awakening that is related to this over here, and then I'll hold out after I realize what my problem is, where it comes from, and the pain that it's causing me. Then I'll hold out for another anywhere from 24 hours to 6 months until I can't stand the pain anymore. And then I will humbly ask God to help me with it. And like other people had talked about, there's after doing my fourth and fifth step and going home and doing my sixth and seventh, there was a sense that this laser light would come down through my bedroom ceiling and hit me in the forehead and would suck these character defects and shortcomings out of my head. And I don't know, there was a space movie at that time, and that had a scene like that. And I didn't think it was going to be that dramatic of a situation, but I thought, man, when they left, they were gone, and I wouldn't have to worry about them. And I can remember realizing that I had I was real impatient. I was at this time I was working at a restaurant, and I would get real impatient with people, you know, when it's taking their order, or they wouldn't know what they wanted or whatever, and I wanted to just grab them, you know, like, let me order for you, you shithead, you know. And I just, and this would be on a good day. This would be on a real good day. It's just like I just didn't have time for other people dragging their feet and whatnot. And so I really was, this one morning, I really focused on, praying for patience, you know. And that morning, it was like it was an auto accident, and I had to take a detour on the way to work, and then I hit, and because I had to take a detour, there was a train, and before I even got to work, I had at least a half dozen incidences where I had to practice some patience, and that's what I've learned around here in almost 8 years, that them character defects, when they arise, that possibly that maybe God's having them arise, because He wants me to work on this area of my life. So He's going to put people, places, or things in front of me that's going to allow me to work on these things. And it's not always going to be fun, and most of the time it's going to be painful. And there's nothing I can really do to avoid it, except isolate. And then it only gets more painful. But so what I try to do a lot of times is, look at these incidences when they come, that it is a growing experience for me. And that's real, real hard for me to do. And when I walked in here 8 years ago, if someone would have told me that's how I was going to have to do it, I don't know if I'd even stayed. I don't even know what to say. So when I prayed, I don't have the ability to stand up in front of people and talk. That was one of my worst things I ever had, like that. And right after doing my sixth and seventh, and that was up there towards the top, was this fear I have about getting up in front of groups of people like that. It seems like somebody shot my phone number and name out over the NA hotline, and I started getting asked to speak and whatnot and chair meetings. I mean, I could not walk in a meeting where they wouldn't say, "Well, Mike, I was thinking about you. I wanted you to chair the meeting tonight." Everywhere I went, and so when I hear people talk about, be careful what you pray for, I really believe that. I really believe that. So that's what I'll leave you with. Be careful what you pray for. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. I would now like to introduce our speaker, Vandana Vanita from Fresno.
Hi, my name is Vanita, and I am an addict alcoholic.
Oh, this is a pleasure. I'd like to thank God for being here clean and sober and welcome all the newcomers and visitors from out of town. And thank Marva and the committee for asking me to share my experience, strength, and hope. And this program is cool, man. It really is. You know, we don't have to drink or use or nothing. And they want me to talk on step 8. Let me start off like this. I went through a recovery. And when I walked in the door, it was on a Friday, and this lady in there crying. I said, what the fuck is she crying for, you know? And I didn't know I was going to have to go through those feelings, you know, and cry and all that other good stuff. But my first meeting was in the other program, AA. I'm not ashamed of that today. That was my first meeting. And I was so busy talking, I didn't hear the people calling me. I was talking. But today I listen to everybody. I really do. Because you guys have something for me that I want. You know, and today I can thank God for being clean and sober. Really clean, you know, one day at a time. Today I go to any length for my sobriety. Any length. And so I went to make amends. You know, they told me, just wait, have patience, you're going to be able, you're going to get to that step, but I wanted to apologize to everybody and shit, you know, because I done messed up all the bridges, all of them, you know. My family wouldn't even buy me cigarettes, they wouldn't even do nothing for me no more, and so I went through the recovery, and then first thing one of my brothers thought was, is she in jail now, you know, and but I wasn't. So the first amend that I made was to God. And then to myself, you know. I have to apologize to myself for the shit that I've done, you know, because I did some bad stuff, but that's okay today, you know. And a month ago, I decided to speak on this. A month ago, I went to make amends to an old relationship. I've been praying for this shit to make amends to him, but God kept him out of my life, you know. So I ran into him a month ago, and I was talking to him. I was telling him that I need to talk to him. And he tells me about what? I say, something that I need to do. My program tells me I need to do this shit, you know. And he tells me, first you have to learn your responsibilities. And I say, I'm learning those today. And the first thing he told me, it's my fault. I say, no, baby, it's not my fault no more. I used to think that. But today it's not all my fault. And what he threw in my face was that he's getting married and he has a baby on the way. I said, congratulations! It was cool, you know, I congratulated him and shit, you know, and it was okay. But we talked some more, and then I left, and I was hurting. And I didn't even hide. I hid it from him. But I got in my car, I left, I cried, I went home, said my serenity prayer, said my Our Father prayer, and laid in the bed and cried. Woke up the next day with an emotional hangover, and it was very emotional. I was so sick. Today I go to any length to stay clean and sober. I called one of my girlfriends, and knew she was at work. I knew she was at work, and I talked to her answering machine, you know, like, you know, it's like this, you know, and the first thing she found, I went back out to start drinking and using, because she called my sister and all this other good stuff, but that's okay today. I have to go to any next to stay clean and sober. I really do, and this program has really saved me, this one and the other one, you know, I speak for both of them. And both of them have faith, and I love both of them. I love all you people, too, and I don't even know you. I just know you got shit fucked up like I do, you know? And it's cool. We can laugh about it. We can talk about it, and it's okay. You know, when I first got into the, like, a couple of months later or so, you know you have to stop me, okay? A couple of months after I got into going to meetings and stuff, they tell me to, like, I hear them say, go to juvenile hall, get involved in the program, and I like to thank Richard, I truly do, because he's on this panel, and I say, I want to go, and the first thing he thought, she's not going to make it, but today I do that. I go to the prisons, I go to the different recovery homes, and I love it, because it's cool to share my experience, strength, and hope, because this program do work. It brought me from, what, 105, 110 pounds to 160? Fuck, do it work or what? You know, it works. You know? And it really do. And I'm going to tell you about the man that I wanted to make to the ex-boyfriend. I was out there smoking the pipe high off of Cisco and mad because I couldn't get another hit, you know, and I vandalized this car, $2,200 worth that I have to pay for today, but I'm not going to worry about it. God, I got to pay for that one because I ain't got the money, you know, straight up. And but it's cool though, you know, it took what it took for me to get here. And I don't mind you guys knowing that I tore up a car with a damn beer bottle, a soda bottle. I vandalized it. And it's okay today. Shit happens, right? You know? And it happens. It happens, you know? And that was hard because I really did blame myself for that. I did. But it's okay, too. And when I wanted to make that amends, he, like, rejected me. But so what? Fuck it, you know? And they say this is a spiritual program, but then I still have a character defect that's cussing. So what, you know? As long as I get the message across. You know, to the newcomers, this program do work. The list that we went through to get loaded, we supposed to, in order to stay clean and stuff, you go through that list to keep an honest program, open-minded, and be willing to stay sober. We have to do that today. You know, I go to many meetings. None of you guys are strangers to me. I love you all, and I don't even know you. I just know you're in the same position that I'm in, trying to stay clean and sober one day at a time. You know, and I can truly bless God and thank God for this program because it has saved me. It really has. I tell you, I lost everything. I lost respect for myself. But today I respect myself, and I respect you. And most of all, I demand respect. Straight up, you know. It's the truth. It's an honest program, right? Very honest program. And today I'm truly honest. You know, and I can just thank you guys. And I love you. No, I'm not a mean person. I'm a very loving and caring person. I really am. Once you get to know me, you'll love me. I keep coming back.
Thank you. I would now like to introduce our speaker, Glenn, from Fresno.
Hi, I'm Glenn. I'm an addict. When I first came to this program, about 2 weeks before I got here, mine and my wife's divorce was almost final, and I begged and I pleaded her to meet me at this bar. At that point, she wouldn't even talk to me anymore. I was calling her in the middle of the night and threatening her and some other weird stuff, and so she met me in this bar, and we got in an argument, and I punched her in the eye, and I left her laying in the parking lot, and I ran over her purse on the way out. And I had this night planned that was going to be a good night. I went and stole a $50 bottle of champagne, and just figured we'd go somewhere nice, and the next day I was real sorry. And then about a week later, I ran out of the drugs that I'd been using for a couple of months that were new drugs to me. And I started to kick, and I got even sorrier. And the next morning, I went over, and I told her how sorry I was, and I cried. And I was on my way to treatment, and I told her that I was sorry. And why was I sorry? And I was sorry because I just burned that bridge to the ground. And she was going to leave me for good. And basically that's how my recovery went for a long time. When I made amends to people, it was because I was afraid they were going to leave and was afraid I fucked up. One of the things that, I wasn't nervous sitting over there, and just like I walked over here and just went, oh. I speak now and then, not real often, but I wasn't nervous at all. And I just started to get a little bit, so anyway. So we made direct amends to such people. We made direct amends for what? We made direct amends for the exact nature of our wrongs. How do I know the exact nature of my wrongs? Because I did an inventory. See, I did three inventories the first 3 years I was clean. And what I found out was that people fucked over me, man, and I was mad about it. That's as far as I ever got, you know? And something was missing, you know? Something was missing from my life. I'm 2.5 years clean. I was about 90 days clean, and I had this job that I had for a long time, and I was making real good money. And I went to work one day, and and got in an argument with the boss, and I told him to shove the job in his ass, and I was going to kill him. I was the first example of this program he'd ever seen. And I walked out of that place, and I said, fuck you and your $40,000 a year job. I showed him. And then I was unemployed. And for 2 years, I used to lay in bed at night, and I used to dream about offing this dude. I didn't dream about it, but I plotted. I plotted how I was going to get even with this fucker for doing me wrong. And ended about 2.5 years, or almost about 2.5 years clean. I called my sponsor one night, and it's the same issue, right? I mean, it's the same issue that's always been. This guy wronged me, and he treated me so badly. And I'd done some inventories up to that point, but I'd never found the exact nature of my wrong, see? Hey, I was a victim, and this guy fucked over me. He treated me badly. He didn't like me, you know. How dare you? So I call my sponsor one night, and I tell him, I say, I started in a, you know, just blah. You know how you call your sponsor, and you're pissed, and you're ready to, you know, you want to do something, and you're insane. And my sponsor's solution, the first thing out of his mouth, he says, you know, he says, I think it's time you go, really just go do it. You need to go kill him. And I said, what? And he says, you need to go kill him. I mean, you've been talking about this for over 2 years now. I mean, this is a program of action. You know, he says, quit being a punk. And I said, well, wait a minute. And he said, well, then you're going to need to pray for him. And I wasn't willing to do that either. But you know what? What happened was we talked for a long time, and I got willing, and I'm going to get on to the ninth step. The point that I'm trying to make is that I can't make an amends to someone feeling like a victim. I can't make a righteous amends to someone if I feel like I'm still have been done wrong. Until I see the exact nature of my wrongs, man, I'm still making amends for selfishness. Sorry don't fit the bill. I've been a sorry motherfucker all my life. And the reason I'm sorry, because I don't want to be alone. I don't want to be alone, man. I don't want people to leave me. I don't want to admit that I'm at fault. You know? And through a process of the steps, you know, the process of the steps to me is a humbling process. You know, it starts by admitting that, hey, man, I did my best and I can't do shit now. And then it goes to, you know, like turning my life over to something else other than my best effort. And then it comes to telling my worst things to somebody else, you know, writing them down. But the most important, me looking at them. And the last step of this humbling process is the ninth step. It's almost like you get schooled up to that point to have the, you know, because that's the ultimate humbling, is to go tell someone. But what happened to me this last time was that for the very first time in my life, I felt how I'd wronged people. I looked around, you know, I was like 4 years clean, and I hadn't changed much, man. I was the same guy that came through the doors, and basically, I wasn't taking nothing. That's all I had to say that was positive, basically, about my life. I'd done some good things, but my motives were fucked up. I mean, I'd done some good things that had some real good, you know, some good impact on this fellowship in Fresno, but my motives were all fucked up. My motives were about being important, being recognized, being popular. I wanted people to like me, you know. And what happened was is so good things still came out of that stuff. But what happened was is that I got involved in some other stuff that really injured some people that really counted in my life, you know. I got clean, and me and my wife worked some things out, and we stayed together, you know. So, and I'm still married to the lady that I used with for, like, we both just had 6 years a few months ago, and we used together for 5 years before that. And it's been a struggle, you know. There's been a lot of wreckage to clean up. One of the things that I found, though, about making amends to people, and this is just my opinion based on my experience, is that the amends that I make based on selfishness, because, I mean, I've made a lot of amends based on selfishness. If I approach you so you still like me, you know, is that any less selfish than why I'm making the amends to start with, you know? So anyway, so it says we made direct amends to such people. For what? For the exact nature of my wrong. So what I started doing was I made the list. I'd made several lists, and I'd stopped there for several years. And some stuff happened, and my life became real desperate. The desperation of my life got to a point where, and one more time, it was based on selfishness. I thought I was going to get loaded. I thought my wife was going to leave me again. I thought this guy that I had fucked over might come back and kill me. I had a lot of stuff going in my life, you know, and it's like, And it's all selfishness. And what my sponsor said to me, he says, have you ever once thought about the damage you're doing to other people? And I said, yeah, but listen. And he says, no, have you ever once thought about the damage you're doing to other people? And so what happened was, is I wrote this other inventory, and man, I saw it. And it made me excited, because for the first time in my life, I saw that I had missed the solution, but now I had it. Or I had something that was viable that I could move forward with. You know, and what the solution was the exact nature of my wrongs. See? It wasn't the fact that I punched some dude out. You know? Why did I punch him out? You know, what did he threaten about me? Where was I selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened in the situation that made me have to, revert to all this stuff that I'd always done? So anyway, so I started out and I started making these rigorous amends. And I started making some real amends to some people that I'd really done some bad things to. But I didn't do it until I prayed and meditated about it a lot, and until I felt the wrong that I'd done in my heart. Until I could approach these people with honest humility, not giving a shit about how, if they wanted to argue with me, you know. One of the things I would take into consideration is what it says in the end of the step. It says, made direct amends wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Well, I made an amends to this person that I've lived with for a long time for a situation that I was involved with that she knew about indirectly, but not like she wasn't sure about. And I think it was a real unpopular thing around this program. I took some flack about it because people thought I was dumping my shit on her. But see, I'd been with this lady for a long time, and I've been dishonest with her for a long time, and I felt like I owed her the truth so she could make some decisions for herself. You know? Whether she was willing to try to continue with this or not. So I did that one. And I didn't do it, though, until I felt the wrongs that I'd done her in my heart. And then I went and I tried to clean up some wreckage in another part of this problem. And then I'm done with my inventory, and I made an amends to my wife, and I'm at work one day, and I work in a place where there's a lot of merchandise. Now, I'm way out of time, huh? I don't know what time I started. I work in around a lot of merchandise, like millions of dollars worth of stuff. And one of the things this guy taught me was about how the moving center, the instinctual moving center that we have, and I'm not going to go into that. But I believe that a lot of the holes that I have inside of me come from that. I'm never going to have enough. So what happens one day is I end up grabbing this thing and throwing it into my truck before I go out on my deliveries. Before I even thought about the consequences or what I was doing. I mean, I just finished my inventory. I just made amends for doing people wrong, and I'm stealing shit again. So I kept this stuff for a couple months, and I didn't touch it. I put it in my garage, and I thought, oh, fuck, I did it again. I can't believe this, man. I'm like, I'm cursed with this, and I'm going to die with it. And so a couple months go by, and one night I had this real bad dream, and then I woke up, and I'm sweating, and I got on my knees, and I started praying, and I've been praying and meditating a lot during this period of time. And I called my sponsor in the morning, and I was crazy, and I just told him, I said, because he told me, he says, you know you're going to have to take it back. No, man, I just won't do it again. I promise. I will not do it again. You know, because I've been real fortunate in my job searches. I've got another one of those real good jobs, and it's like, I'm terrified again, selfishness, because I'm going to lose my job because of my selfishness, so selfishness, and selfishness. Like, wow, here I am again. I'm still selfish. And so I'm off and I'm hurt and I call my boss, but before I did, I call my wife, you know, because except when to do so would injure them or others. See, I mean, I could be a valiant guy and I could go down and say, hey, man, I stole this from you. He could say, you're fired, but see, it affects my wife and my family too. I got to talk to them about it first. And I can't be going and making these, these valiant, exercises of, program without checking with other people that are going to be, affected by it. And so what I did was I talked to my wife about it, and she said, and I was terrified, man. I didn't want to go down there. Aside from the fact that it was real humbling, I was terrified that I was going to lose my job. But see, you know what I was more afraid of? Is that if I just let this one slide, next time it would be another one. And next time it would be something else, and I wouldn't recover, man. Because to me, I didn't start to recover when I stopped taking drugs. My recovery didn't start until I did a fearless and searching moral inventory, until I turned my will and my life over to the care of God, and until I became willing to do these steps, you know, and to try to practice these principles in all my affairs. You know, I was crazier than shit not taking drugs. You know, So the step is like a threefold step. You know, it's like, okay, you got to make the amends, but you can't do it if other people are going to be injured. I don't know. It's just some of the stuff I was taught in approaching this stuff. I have to be considerate of everybody involved. And I went and told this guy about it, and he laughed. He didn't laugh at me, though. He laughed, and he says, man, he says, I have a lot of admiration for you, he said. He says, just don't do it again. You know? And I haven't done it since. It's been a couple of years, and that's, But see, when I think about that shit, I got to ask God, oh, man, you know what? Strength and courage, man. I don't need it. Get me through it. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Glenn. I would now like to introduce our speaker, Marva, from Fresno.
My name is Marva, and I'm an addict alcoholic. Welcome, newcomers and visitors, and as you can tell, I'm terrified. I was asked to do this, and I said, yeah, no problem, you know. And in the back of my head, I thought, you know, like you're going to be real nervous and stuff. And so what I did is, like, I would grab people at meetings and say, how do I talk about the 10 steps? And I read the book, and I studied for it. And all of a sudden, like this week, yesterday, I was terrified and like I wanted to run and I was going to go to another country until it was all over. And today, like my kid keeps running away from me and I can't control anything and she's teasing me and I'm like, can't you tell him, dear, please be good, you know? And she thinks it's real funny. You know, but like I kept talking to some people and talked to Vanita and like I was gonna like hold her hand and like we had to separate chairs and stuff and I start thinking like we're all in this together and the reason we're here is because like we're real sick and it's gonna be okay. You know, welcome newcomers and visitors and my experience with the 10th step, I just recently experienced it, you know, because what I was going to do is I was going to go through the book and work the steps real quick in order so everything would be in order and everything would be okay when I got here. And it didn't happen that way, but like, you know, I did a 10th step just recently and it was with like my boss and... you know, like I had lied to this man. I looked him in his face and he asked me, you know, did you do this? And I said, no, I didn't do that, you know. And like it harmed him and like the company I work with. And it was making me real nervous because I got a boss that's like real tall and stuff. And so like I went in the bathroom, you know, and like I was telling myself, I said, you're an actress, you know, this is your leading role, and just this is not going to bother you and stuff. So like I got through the day, you know, and every time he walked by, I put my head down, you know, because I felt so ashamed of myself. So like I called my sponsor, and she said to make an amends to him, you know, take your inventory and make an amends. And I said, why do I have to do that? Can't you think of anything else? I mean, isn't there anything else I could do? Anything else? And he knew I was lying, you know. But I was hoping that maybe he did know, you know, but I knew that he did know. It just bothered me so bad. It just really fucked with me. So anyway, I did that and I kept talking about it and like I waited, you know. And it made me mad that I had a conscience. It really pissed me off. You know, because like when I was a kid, I was the kind of kid that had a conscience. I remember in kindergarten, the teacher asked me to go back and get a ball, you know, and like there was this book I had been wanting for a long time, and I like books, and I stole the book. So I bought it home, and my babysitter asked me, where'd you get the book? And I just knew that everybody knew I was a thief, so I was like, you know, like I destroyed the book and tore it up real good so my mother wouldn't see it in the garbage can and stuff. So like, I've always had a conscience, you know, and that was like one of the reasons I used drugs was because it could cover up my conscience and stuff. So anyway, like, I tell my boss, you know, like, may I talk to you for a minute, you know, and he goes, yeah, and I'm like, I was pissed off because, like, really I had got caught, you know, not because I had lied, you know, and so anyway, like, I talked to him, and I said, you know, I lied to you, and I lied to you because I was afraid, you know, because I didn't want, every time him walking by, he was going to think, she lied to me, I can never trust her, you know, and I made the amends to him, and like, it was okay, you know, he said, okay, and like, I wanted to ask him, well, aren't you going to punish me, aren't you going to, like, fire me or anything like that, and like, he didn't do that, you know, I also know what happens when I do not continue to take personal inventory. I get real screwed up. I get real messed up. You know, because, like, I'll do something or whatever, and, like, I'm going about, and I'm thinking, this doesn't bother me, this doesn't bother me, this doesn't bother me. And the more I'm saying it, like, the more it's, like, growing and stuff, you know? And so, like, I need to make an amends to a woman like I saw here, you know, and like, it's going to be okay, you know. Doing my inventory, I realized, like, I have a lot of defects still, you know, because all I could see before I did this to the company is that the wrongs they were doing, and I was telling, you know, my friends, but look at what they did, just look at what they did, can't you see what they did, how awful of them, and really it was to make myself look good, you know, and so, like, I'm responsible, like, for my own stuff and taking my inventory, and I continue to do that because, like, it's helped me a lot recently. I don't want to get, like, the stuff all backed up, you know, and, like, have to go through the pain and stuff, even though I still don't always do it right away, you know. I do the best I can, like, with what I have, you know. Oh, God, I can't believe I'm doing this. I accept feelings real well, and I don't know where I'm going with that other than, like, I'm glad to be here, you know. I'm thankful to be clean. I remember someone told me when I first got here that I was not going to make it, you know, and I said, I'll show you, motherfucker. You know, and I'm still tempted to go back and say, nah, 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 I'm clean, you know, but, like, I don't need to do that. I don't know, my face is hot, and, like, I'm pounding and stuff, and I made an amends to, like, this person that I work with, you know. I was going to knock the holy shit out of him. I was going to, you know, like, I came back to work with an attitude. I had been gone a while, and I've been gone a while, and the guy, he just was pissing me off, and I went back to work with an attitude, you know. I had not been doing the 10 stuff, obviously, and I was going to kill him. I went back to work looking for a fight, and that's what I got, you know, and I said, right, Nick, I was not wrong. He was wrong because he made me get mad, and if he'd leave me alone and just stay out of my space, everything would be okay. But, like, I have to look at myself. I'm like, that's not fair sometimes. I just don't want to have to look at myself, you know. And what, like, has got me through this is, like, knowing that I have, like, a lot of people that really like me. Imagine that. They really, really care about me. Because when my friend, actually, she gave up the information, you know, on me, and ex-friend, she gave up the information on me, and what it did for me is, like, it made me go toward people that really do care about me, you know, because it used to be if you screw me over, I would go after you and try to make you love me and keep going after you and make you love me and stuff. But, like, I guess the lesson from that was you are worthy even though you made a mistake. You're human, you know, and it's going to be okay. The world is not going to cave in. I just knew that the entire city of Fresno was going to cave in because I told a lie, and it didn't, you know, and people still love me. And I walk in meetings and they say, I love you. And I'm like, are you sure? But don't you know what I just did? And, like, they still care about me, you know, and that blows me away sometimes, you know. I am happy to be here, despite the fact that I'm nervous and self-centered and all that kind of stuff, you know. And for the newcomer, keep coming back.
Thank you, Margaret. I would now like to introduce our speaker, Tom, from Fresno.
Okay, my name's Tom, and I'm a drug addict. And I'd like to welcome you, if you're new to Narcotics Anonymous or you're just from out of town. You know, the 11th step says that we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understand Him. You know, I like that part, as we understand Him. See, because, you know what, man, like, your God and my God is probably different, you know, and that's okay. You know, whatever works, you know. And you know what, like, I honestly believe that. You know, like, when I was a kid and I was growing up, you know, I remember we used to have to sit down and watch the Ten Commandments, and here he was, and he was throwing these big old blocks of stuff at these people. And my mom used to make me watch this, man, and I was scared, you know. I was scared, you know. She'd make me watch all these programs, these religious programs, and I got real scared because, you know what, I didn't understand, and nobody took time really to explain it to me, and they did, and I really didn't understand it, you know. And you know what, so I really didn't have God in my life that much, man. You know, I knew that there was a God and everything else, and you know what, like, I'm like everybody else, man. You know what, I prayed that the connection would be home. You know what, I prayed that the man wouldn't pull me over. You know, I used to pray when my old lady would have to leave, or I'd have to leave, and I didn't have nowhere to go. You know, that's when I used to pray. You know, I got here, man, like, I got here, and I didn't understand a lot about God, man. You know, I didn't understand. I was still scared. There was still that fear in me, you know, of you know what, man, like, trying to get close to this God, you know, and like, I didn't know nothing about it. And like, where I came from, you know what, like, we didn't ask for help, man. You know, if we needed help, we didn't ask for it where I came from. And you know what, man, like, once I got here and I started to work these steps and I started to see who I was, you know what, man, like, you know what, I had to come out and ask you people, hey, man, you know what, will you help me? You know, and even today, you know what, there's a lot of things that I don't know, you know. And if I'm sitting next to you in a meeting and somebody says something, you know what, I'll ask you, hey, what does that mean? You know, and you know what, you know, that's what you people taught me, man. You know, like, if I don't understand, man, or something like that, I don't let that false pride get in my way no more. You know, what I'll do is I'll ask somebody, man, today I can do that. And you know what, man, like, you people are the ones who taught me about God. You know, you guys are the ones who taught me. And you know what, I'd like to thank you for that. You know, when I got here, my sponsor told me, you know what, man, you can only keep what you have by giving it away. You know, and you know what, man, like, I had a hard, real hard time with that, you know. And he says, you know what, man, you got to practice the principles at home also. And I'm saying, wow, man, you know what, how do you do this? You know, so I'd sit here and I'd call him and I'd ask him, how do you do this, you know. And anyway, I'll share some stuff what happened at home, you know. I got a little girl, she's 4 years old, her name's Natalie, she's a beautiful little girl. And like, if you're here from Fresno, you guys would know. She's 4, she's going on 7, though, you know. And you know, what happens is, like, I come home from work and she tells me, hey, Dad. And I says, what? And she goes, I want to take a shower with you, Dad. And I says, what? And she goes, yeah, I want to take a shower with you. So I says, all right, come on, you know. So me and her are taking a shower, and so she's in the front, and anyway, I get done washing my hair and I'm kneeling down, you know, and I'm praying. And she says, hey, Dad. She don't call me Daddy, she calls me Dad, you know. And she goes, hey, Dad. I says, what? She goes, what are you doing? I said, what? She goes, well, what are you doing? And I said, well, Dad's praying to God, you know. And she goes, you're praying to God, Dad? And I says, yeah, I'm praying to God, you know. And she goes, well, Dad, who's God? You know. And I said, well, you know what? That's somebody greater than me, you know. And she goes, okay, Dad. So anyway, that night, you know. Because, you know, in her life, I'm the greatest, you know. You know, in my daughter's life, I'm the greatest, you know. And, so anyway, that night, man, me and my wife were sitting down, we were watching TV, and anyway, I tell her, well, you know what, like, it's time for you to go to bed, you know. And so anyway, she goes to bed, and my wife says, hey, look at her. And she's kneeling down in her bed, and she's got her hands like this, you know, and she's praying, and she gets up in bed. So I says, all right, that's cool, you know, so I just let that one go, you know. Anyway, the next day I come home from work, and like, the work what I do is real dirty, man. My trade what I got is a real dirty job. And like, I don't like to take a shower with her because, you know what, man, like, I like to take a good shower, and when she's there, you know, I can't do that, you know. And so the next day I come home from work, and she says, hey, Dad, you got to take a shower, Dad. And I says, what? She goes, yeah, you got to take a shower, and I'm going to take a shower with you. And I says, no, you know what, you're not going to take a shower with Dad. You know, not today. She goes, Dad, I got to. no, Dad, I'm serious, I got you. So I said, all right, come on, you know. And here I am, and I'm hot, and I'm sweaty, and I'm tired, and everything else. And she gets in the shower, and I'm washing my hair, and I'm washing myself, and I turn around, and I see her, and she's on her knees, and she goes, hey, Dad. No, and I told her, hey, Nat. She says, what? I said, what are you doing? She goes, what, Dad? I said, what are you doing? She goes, Dad, I'm praying like you, you know. And you know what, man, that's the miracle what I've gotten out of you people. You know, they told me that I could only keep what I have by giving it away, you know, and practicing these principles at home. And you know what, man, that's what I do. I try the best of my ability, man, to practice the principles at home. You know, like I heard a lot of good things what everybody else said. And you know what, man, like I can apply that to my life today, you know. You know what, like I'm not real comfortable, man, you know. I'm not real comfortable getting down before I go to bed in front of my wife, getting down on my knees and praying. You know, I'm not real comfortable with that. But you know what, man? Like, if I can be alone, you know, if I can be alone, like, in the shower or something like that, you know what, man? Like, I'll get down on my knees and I'll pray. And you know what, man? Like, I'm real self-centered. You know, I got a lot of defects, you know. And you know what, man? Like, I pray about them. You know, I still got this anger, man. I'm still self-centered, you know. You know, I'm all that stuff. You know, it says, just like it says in the white book, man, it says, we didn't become an addict in one day, and we don't recover in one day. And you know what, man, I believe that. And you know what, man, by the grace of God, you know what, my life has been better. You know, my life has been better. You know what I'm trying to say, man, is, you know what, man, like, somebody taught me how to drink, somebody taught me how to use, and you know what, man, you people teach me how to recover. It's real simple, man. It's real simple. If I'm willing to let you people teach me, and if I'm willing to be open-minded, you know what, man, it'll all come together. You know, like I'm coming up on 4 years, man, and you know what, man, like I can't take the credit for this. You know, it's all about God, man. You know, it's all about God, and like you people are the ones who showed me. You know, man, like I know when it isn't God's will, it's like when I got guilt behind it. You know, well, if I'm doing something and it's got guilt behind it, well, you know what, man, I know that it isn't right. You know, like, you know what, sometimes, you know what, man, like, I mistake God for Santa Claus. You know, like, I ask God, you know what, man, I want this Oldsmobile, man. You know, and God, you know what, God, you know what, God, I want these center lines. And I want these low profile tires, and you know what, man, I want to look good. You know, I'll tilt that wheel down, I'll turn the stereo on, I'll roll up the windows, turn the air on, and I'm looking good, Jack. I got my Ray-Bans on, hey, don't mess with me. Once I got my cigarette in my mouth, hey, I'm cool, you know. And you know what, man, like, I asked God for all these things, you know. And you know what, man, like, what happened is somebody needed it more than I did, and they took it, you know. And they took it, and you know what, man, like, I was thinking, well, you know what, man, God's angry at me now, you know. God ain't angry at me, it's just something that happened. And it's something that I have to learn to accept, you know, what happened. You know, and what happened, man, is, like, I got the car back, and I did this, and I did that, and the insurance company wrote me out a check, man. And my baby got sick, you know. And, like, you know what, man, it's, you know, like, she needed this surgery, man, and, like, I was real nervous, man, and me and my wife are nervous, and we're standing there, you know, and like, we're praying about it before it happens, you know, man, like, we're going home, and we're saying, thanks, God, you know. And, like, you know what, man, like, I went out, and I bought my tires and my rims again, and you know what, man, like, it was just like a sign there saying, you know what, Tom, it's not time for you to have these tires in your rims, you know. So what I had to do is I had to take them off, man, I had to sell them. You know, but you know what, man, I'll do that today. You know what, the material things ain't really important to me today. You know, today what's important to me, man, is my family, my recovery, you know, and you people. You know, and that's okay. You know, that's okay, man. You know, if you're new, and you know what, man, you're scared, and you're thinking, oh, man, you know, this is a whole different trip. Well, you know what, man, it is. You know, it is, but you know what, man, that's the way I got here. I got here scared. And you know what, man, I just like to welcome you one more time and encourage you to keep coming back. Thank you.
Thanks, Tom. Ken, are you speaking? I would now like to introduce our speaker, Ken, from Fresno.
I don't know. My name is Ken. I'm an addict. And I'd like to say that I'm grateful to be in a meeting of Narcotics Anonymous. And I'm grateful to be clean today. And, I've heard everything I needed to hear. You know, I've been at this convention since Friday, and early Friday morning. And I haven't been to but a couple of meetings. And I've heard everything I needed to hear right in this room today. And I'm real grateful that I was asked to speak on the 12th step. You know, for me, the 12th step says that having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to addicts and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. You know, and I'm real grateful that there are people in Narcotics Anonymous who are living the program of Narcotics Anonymous and who are living the 12th step of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, because that's how I got to Narcotics Anonymous. It was because someone was living the program, you know, and they were sharing their experience and their strength and their hope with me. You know, when I came here, I was real desperate. I was real alone. I was real tired. I was spiritually bankrupt, physically, almost dead. You know what? My life was miserable, and you know what? And somehow, you know, through a power that I know that today that is greater than myself, I was able to share that with another human being. You know, and I don't know how that happened. You know, or why it happened when it did. But as I said, you know, like this person was working a program of Narcotics Anonymous. And I didn't know what was wrong with me. And I'd been using for 25 years. And I couldn't stop. You know, and I wanted to stop. And I wanted that more than I wanted anything else. I just didn't want to pick up again. And I asked this guy, I said, what's going on with me? I don't understand this. I've never had this problem before where I couldn't stop, man. You know, and he said, you're an addict. You know, and you have a disease. And it's called addiction. You know what, and there's a spiritual program that has 12 steps. And if you admit to yourself that you're an addict, and you work those 12 steps, you don't ever have to use again. And I didn't understand that. And I didn't know what he meant by it. And I ended up going into this treatment center, and and people shared in there. And they took me to meetings in Narcotics Anonymous. And I sat in the back of the rooms. And I was scared. And I didn't know who you people were. And I knew that I didn't want what you had. And I took your inventories. But at the end of every meeting, you told me to keep coming back. You know, and I did. And I just kept coming here. You know, and I don't know when, but at some point I started to realize that, you know, like, I hadn't used anything, and I didn't have to use anything. You know, and somehow, one day at a time, you know, it's like, I got a message. I got a message that, that is saving my life today. You know, I believe, you know, that spiritual awakening happened for me, you know, when I met this guy that brought me to this program. And I didn't know that it was a spiritual awakening. All I know is that I was desperate. And there was hope in his voice, and there was hope in the way in which he told me about this program. And I latched on to that hope and that desperation, and I brought it back to meetings. and I finally got a sponsor, you know, and I asked him to be my sponsor, and he told me that he would, and I shared with him things that I didn't think I'd ever share with anybody. And somehow I started to open up in meetings, and I was able to share in meetings what was going on with me. And I heard people talk about going to 90 meetings in 90 days and getting phone numbers and getting into service. You know, and he suggested that I do that. And I did. And I remember going to an activities meeting with 45 Days Clean. You know, and somebody suggested that I go there because they would put me to work in the program, and I did, and they did, you know, and I went to dances, and I set up chairs, and I picked up ashtrays, and I picked up cups, and, you know, I swept the floor, and I just hung out, man, you know, and I stayed in activities, and I stayed at the dances, and I stayed in the meetings, and I went to coffee after the meetings, and I stayed out until 11, 12 o'clock at night every night after the meeting because I wanted to hear what you people had to share. You know, and people shared with me, you know, and they gave away what they had, you know, and I continued to get a message, you know, and I began to work the steps with my sponsor. And he taught me how to work the steps. You know, he taught me how to work the first three steps. And, you know, and it wasn't a real complex thing. It wasn't about, you know, a real depth of an understanding. He was just living the program of Narcotics Anonymous in a very simple way. And he shared that with me. And I got a message. And I continued to work the steps, and I did a fourth and a fifth step with my sponsor. And he told me that I needed to start giving away what I had. And I said, what do you mean give away what I have? What do I have? He says, how long has it been since you used? And I said, I haven't used in a year and a half. And he says, that's what you can give away. But this program works. You know, and when I think about it now, you know, it's like, for me, it didn't have to be real complex because I'm the kind of addict that, you know, like I like to dissect things and I like to tear them apart. I like to figure them out. And by the grace of God, I didn't have to do that. You see, because I could be too smart for this program. You know. And I continue to work the steps. You know, and I worked the seventh and the eighth and the fifth and the sixth and the ninth step. And I began to get people to ask me to go to H&I panels. And I carried the message into the institution and the jails. And I carried the message into the hospitals. You know, and I got deeper in the service and I began to work in the area service and in the regional service. You know, and today I'm real grateful. Because this program is working in my life. It's the most important thing in my life today. It comes before everything in my life. Because without this program, I don't have a life. I'm that miserable, desperate, sick human being that I was the day I walked in here. And I don't have to do that ever again. You know, I was real nervous about talking about this step, you know, and I'm still real nervous, but, you know, I asked a guy last night about it, you know, and like he shared with me, you know, and he shared with me his experience, you know, and he says, you know what, man, he says, you've done, you know, you've worked the steps, you know, you've had a spiritual awakening, whether you know it or not. You know, you've carried the message, and you're practicing these principles in all your affairs. the best of your ability. You know, and I thought about that one because I'm, you know, like right now today, you know, like I'm having some trouble in my relationship, you know, with this woman that I love, and you know, and I'm trying to understand God's will for me in this relationship, and I'm trying to understand, you know, like and I'm trying to like take a look at my behavior in this relationship, you know, and it's real hard because I don't want to look at it, you know, like I don't want to face that stuff. But you know what, like this program is real simple, and God only gives us what we can handle today. You know, and I'm learning that one. You know, and I'm doing the best I can in this relationship with what I have today, with what you've given me so freely. You know, and I know that more will be revealed to me. And you know, for me, the 12th step is the step that carries the message into the institutions and the jails, and you know, and the 12th step is our public information and our phone line. To me, the 12th step is our World Service Conference and our area and regional conventions, and the 12th step is the newcomer introducing himself in the meetings. You know, it's the 12th step is this program. You know, it's a combination of all of the steps for me. You know, and the 12th step is the road to freedom. You know, I'm real grateful and honored to be asked to speak at this convention. It's, for me, it's been truly a spiritual experience. And I've learned a lot in the process of this convention planning, you know, about who I am and what I'm all about. And that's why I'm here, you know, to learn about me. And God has given me an opportunity to learn a lot about myself since I've been in this program. And He continues to reveal things to me. And for that, I am forever grateful. And I'd like to thank you for allowing me to share today.
Let's give all our speakers a show of thanks for sharing with us today.